this life, don't miss it.
Want to see the world from a totally different perspective?
Ready for provocative conversation?
Intriguing stories?
And inspiration?
Then don't touch that dial.
Welcome
to Talk with Francesca.
She'll give you something to talk about all week long. Now, here's Francesca.
What if you took the time to really soak it?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Talk with Francesca. That's talkwithfrancesca.com. You are listening to AM 1510 WMEX in Boston and the Legends WNBP in Newburyport. Jump on your computer if you want to weigh in on our conversation. We're going to be talking about red flags in love. The show is sponsored by Terra Maya Restaurante in the North End. Fabulous food. She was actually in the studio. Carla, the owner of Terra Maya, last week, and we had the meal of our lives. So if you're looking for some place to go on a Friday or Saturday night, or any night for that matter, you've got to go to Terra Maya's. All right, we're going to dive right in. How do smart women get taken by con men? When it comes to relationships, everyone has issues, but some people have, well, personality disorders. Donna Anderson, who is joining me now in the studio, she explains how to spot the true problem partners in her new book, Red Flags, A Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. Well, welcome, Donna, and thanks for joining us on Talk with Francesca.
I'm so glad to be here, Francesca. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Donna, what makes you an expert on love fraud, dare I ask?
Sure, you can ask, and I'm happy to tell you. It was a bad experience, but I'm using my experience to help other women and men for that matter as well. I was married to a con man. This man took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least six different women during our 2.5-year relationship. He had a child with one of those women, and then 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time he committed bigamy. Now, this behavior made absolutely no sense to me until I discovered or realized that he was a sociopath. And because of what I learned, I developed my website, which is called lovefraud.com, and I wrote the book, Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath.
So when someone cheats, or not that I am advocating for it at all, I am completely against it. I don't even believe, I'm a believer that once it happens, the relationship is done. That's just my feeling. But why does that make someone a sociopath?
Well, not everybody who cheats is a sociopath, because there are certainly plenty of people who just stray for whatever reason.
Right.
But a sociopath is a social predator. These people live their lives by exploiting people. So when you get involved with a sociopath, I mean, most people think that a sociopath is all a deranged serial killer because that's what we see on TV and in the movies and everything, and that's not necessarily true. I mean, most sociopaths never kill anybody, but what they are is social predators, and what that means is that when they get involved in a relationship, they're not looking for love, they're looking for someone to exploit.
Okay, so that was going to be my question, is let's really define what a sociopath in love in particular, or in a relationship in particular. Well, of course, sociopath, they're always in relationship, right?
Yes, because that what they do is exploit people. So, mm-hmm. I mean,
it
certainly happens in romantic relationships. They're among the favorite targets, but they treat all people this way. I mean, these are the same folks who are, bullies at work, who are your neighbors, you know, that are maniacs. These are the same people who lie and cheat and defraud credit card companies and also perhaps abuse their children. So the thing about a sociopath is that they aren't this way just in a particular situation. They're that way in all their experiences in life.
So did they come out of the womb this way, or did they develop this personality disorder?
Actually, it's a bit of both. People are born with a predisposition to become a sociopath or to have a personality disorder. It is highly genetic. But then what happens is that the parenting that they get and the environment that they grow up in is what happens to really push it so that the person does develop the disorder.
So can, so I'm not sure if you can actually answer this question. This might be a question for a doctor, but if neither parent is a sociopath, can the child still be one?
Sure, because genetics is a crapshoot.
Mm.
You know, there is the possibility that somewhere back along the family tree, the disorder did develop, and it just showed up in this generation.
So it is part of someone's brain chemistry?
Yes, that's part of it as well. I mean, it is highly genetic. There is a genetic predisposition, but the current research is also finding that there are differences in the brain between people who have, well, to be more precise, antisocial personality disorder or psychopathy, a psychopath. I should point out that the term sociopath is not a clinical definition. I'm using it as a generic term to cover all people who have exploitative personalities and are manipulators. And so there are several diagnoses, but the research focuses on the term psychopath, and they are finding that people who are psychopaths have differences in their brains.
So, Donna, what made you fall in love with a sociopath?
Well, at the time that I met this man, I was 40 years old and had yet to be married. And he was just larger than life.
Charming as hell.
Oh, gosh. Charming, magnetic. He presented himself to be this fabulously successful entrepreneur. And we were going to not only be partners in romance, but partners in business. And he would have us living in the lap of luxury, as he described it.
You died and went to heaven, right?
Yes, yes. And all I needed to do was help him get over the hump a little bit, and we would be just fabulous.
What hump was that?
The hump was the money. I mean, he started taking money from me shortly after I met. I mean, he proposed very quickly after we met, and not long after that he started asking for money, but it was never, of course, money for him. It was an investment in our future and the money that would be used to get this business going and everything. And, you know, even when I had doubts about what the money was for, he just had a way of, you know, presenting it so that it convinced me to participate.
Well, be specific. So how did he convince you? I mean, you know, I mean, a woman who's 40 years old, I mean, you've been around the block for a while, you know, I mean, so it's not like you've been around the world, you know, you've met people, you've learned about people and people's personalities. You didn't see any kind of signs or any kind of, well, red flags.
Not at the time. And so it's like the first time that he suggested that he asked me for money, I mean, he portrayed it as an investment, and he said he wanted me to beef up my portfolio and that this would be an opportunity for great returns, and it would not only would I be paid for my efforts as we went forward, but I would be part owner of the organization and would be entitled to dividends from everything that happened. So, you know, he presented it to me as if he was looking out for my financial well-being in the future. And, you know, that was the first time that he asked for money. And then as...
Well, how much money did he ask you for?
That time, I think it was $5,000.
Huh.
So,
that's
I mean,
a chunk of change.
It was a chunk of change.
It's not lunch money.
No. I mean, it was a bunch. And...
What were you doing for work?
Well, I had my own business. I am a writer, and so I'm a commercial copywriter. And at the time, I had a lot of clients, and I was doing well. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't ask for that money all at once. It was over time and over years, and he also would seem to have other people who were vouching for him because he introduced me to the people who were going to be his business partners, and he just. And this is very typical of what a sociopath will do or a con artist will do is they create this whole house of cards, but you don't know it's a house of cards until it collapses.
Very interesting. So what I guess I don't understand is, so here you were a successful woman, and yet you did not see any kind of signals. You didn't question in your mind, like, that's a lot of money or nothing like that.
Well, I did, okay. But this is exactly why sociopaths are so effective. I mean, the key is that I did not know that somebody like this would exist. I mean, and this is very common among all kinds of people, is that, you know, we get all these messages in society that everybody is good inside and everybody...
Right, basically good. Human beings are basically good.
Basically good.
Do you think that's
not true? We're all looking
for
the same thing. Pardon me?
Do you think that's not true?
I think that there are exceptions.
Right.
And what we learn essentially is that, you know, we're all created equal. Everybody has good inside. Everybody just wants to be loved. And that is true for 88% of the population. But then there is this 12% of the population who are exploiters and manipulators through and through, and everything that we learn from society and when we go to school and go to church and everything does not apply to that group of people.
Where'd you come up with that 12%?
The figure is based on the actual estimates of the different personality disorders. The experts estimate that there are 1% to 4% of the population are sociopaths or psychopaths. An additional 6% of the population are narcissists. An additional 2% of the population have borderline personality disorder. And what these four clinical disorders have in common is that the people who have them are essentially exploiters and manipulators. Mm-hmm. And so if you add that all together, you come up with 12% of the population. And if you look at the raw numbers, that means there are 37 million people in the United States that you should not romantically get involved with.
Oh, ouch. So when did you realize that you were being exploited? Or am I jumping too far ahead?
Well, I mean, I knew all that the business wasn't working out, okay?
What kind of business was it?
We were working on a Titanic exhibition. This was back in 1997 and 98. And if you remember, the movie Titanic came mm-hmm. out then. Mm-hmm. And he had this idea to develop an exhibition that people could go to and see artifacts and see things from the movies. And his background was film and advertising and everything. Plus, he got other people to invest in this.
Oh, I mean, wow.
We had investors who were going to come up with $500,000 to put into this show.
So how did you determine that, just excuse me for interjecting here, but how did you determine that this was just not a person with a bad business plan and that he was actually mentally...
It wasn't until later, okay? Now, as I'm going through this, I mean, there were all these financial problems. I didn't know that he was cheating on me until later on. And so I kept saying to myself, I mean, what kind of wife abandons her husband because the business plans aren't working out? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so this is what I'm thinking. And what happened was
Were you happy?
No, I wasn't happy because he was draining my money, and you know, plus he was manipulative to me. I knew that I wasn't always getting the right story, and it got to the point where it was like, okay, I just want this to succeed so I can get my money out and get a divorce.
Oh, okay.
All right, okay. And which is common, you know, because you know, once somebody hooks you in,
right.
it's you don't want to part with what you've already lost.
Right, right.
It's very difficult to, you know, cut your losses and move on. So what happened was that, unfortunately, the actual investors didn't come through, and so that the whole thing collapsed. But we still had taken possession of all these different Titanic artifacts. In fact, I owned like two lifeboats, you know, one that was in the movie and one that may have been on the Titanic itself.
Wow.
So he had arranged to go down to Florida. And he was talking to somebody down there about opening up the exhibition in Florida, in Orlando. So I went with him. And while I was down there, thinking and being told that we had a deal to put this together, and I'm like, all I want to do is, like, get it going and so I get my money back.
Okay. So he had no idea at this point that you weren't happy.
Oh, we were fighting. I mean, he knew that I wasn't happy, but I did not understand the extent of what was going on.
Yeah.
So what happened was I took him to an airport because he had an opportunity to sell all our materials, and this is what I wanted to do. Like, let's sell the stuff, let's get our money back, and then I can get out of here. So I took him to the airport. And we fought on the way to the airport, and I said, you know, I mean, my fear was that he was going to, like, not take this opportunity and, you know, say that he wants too much money and nothing would come through. So after I got back to the – oh, on the way, I asked him where some rings of mine were, because at this point I was so broke that I was thinking of taking the rings to a pawn shop to, you know, get some money to buy food. And he said they were in a lockbox in his office. So I drop him at the airport. I go back to our apartment where we're staying. I root around in his office, and I find this box. And there's a key just laying right in the front, in the top of the drawer. I open it up, and inside I find pictures of him with a baby. Okay, this is not my baby. I find birthday cards and Christmas cards, you know, from this this other woman with him and the baby. And I find a birth certificate indicating that he was the father of the child and it had been conceived and born during our marriage.
Oh, my gosh. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. And I'm speaking with Donna Anderson, who is the author of Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. So, Donna, what did you do?
Well, my first reaction was relief because now I could leave.
Interesting.
You know, now I find out that he's cheating on me and he's had a child with this other woman. So essentially I packed up everything that was in Florida. I knew he was away. And so he called me. He called me the next day and says, "How's everything?" And I'm like, "Oh, fine," because I didn't want him to know what my plans were.
Right.
And as soon as I knew he was on the plane leaving to come back to Florida, I took off to go back to New Jersey, which is where I live. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I got back home. I knew he was cheating on me. And it wasn't actually until a few months later where I started contacting some of the other women, because I came home and he had all these papers that were always all over his office that was in my basement. I never looked at him. The guy was a pack rat. You know, there was stuff everywhere.
You wonder whether he subconsciously wanted to be caught. Maybe he doesn't like the life that he's
living. Oh, he absolutely wanted to be caught.
Why?
And the reason was he was done with me. I had no more money.
Ah, okay. So, all right, he had used you. He didn't need you anymore.
Exactly. So you know, it was time to get rid of me. Well, but he wanted me to be the one to leave. He didn't, because, you know, then he could hold it over it that I was the one who left, that he didn't leave, and it was all my fault. So what happened was I started going through these papers, and I found all these women. I mean, lots of emails and faxes and all this other stuff of women over the years who had been, you know, giving him money and were asking for it back. And so I contacted one of these women who was in Pennsylvania, and I said to her, "This is Donna Anderson. I'm James Montgomery's wife, and I'd like to suggest that you don't give him any more money," because I had found evidence that she had wire transferred like $6,000 to him.
Mm-hmm.
She said to me, "It's too late. I already gave him $96,000.
Ouch.
And that's when I knew that the whole thing was a scam.
And how much money had you given to him at this point?
At that point, it was about $250,000.
Oh,
but as I was going through this, I found all this evidence from other women who had also given him money. And by the time I added it up, he had taken over $1 million from a series of women.
Where is he these days?
These days, he is in Australia. He was originally from Australia. And although when I met him, he was living right up the road from where I live. And essentially, I filed for divorce. I also accused him of fraudulent marriage and breach of contract. And he never appeared at the divorce. The judge awarded me all the money that was taken from me, plus $250,000 in punitive damages, which was, for being exploitative. I tried to get the money. I actually engaged international search agents, but there was no money. I mean, essentially, he blew it all.
Right.
And but he did go back to Australia, and at this point, he's living on a pretty meager Australian pension, and I hear about him from time to time. But I haven't been in contact with him, you know, since I left him.
Well, it's a heart-wrenching story. It really is. And how are you today?
Oh, I'm great.
Well, how long ago was this, Donna?
Well, this all happened. I divorced him in 2000. So in 2001, I met another man, and we've been together ever since. We've been married for 10 years.
Oh, great.
And my husband, Terry Kelly, is my business partner, and he's the one who helped me launch lovefraud.com. And if it weren't for him, there would be no Love Fraud.
It just so life has really turned around for you. And how has that left you in terms of trusting people?
I did a lot of work
internally,
you know, to recover. And that's what Love Fraud is all about. I have lots of at this point, I've collected more than 5,000 cases of people who've been involved with sociopaths. And that was the reason that I wrote the book, because, you know, after talking to all these people and listening to the stories, I could start to see the patterns of what the warning signs were of love fraud.
I'm surprised you weren't able to get them behind bars.
Oh, well, we turned him into the FBI, and the FBI investigated and took the case to the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, and the U.S. attorney declined to prosecute.
Really?
It happens all the time.
You know,
essentially, prosecutors do not want to get involved with fraud cases. They particularly do not want to get involved with a romantic fraud case, you know, between people who are romantically involved, because it's so much of a he said, she said,
right.
Or at least that's the way they look at it, and they just can't be bothered.
Right. Donna, this is fascinating and also interesting. We are going to take a short break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. I'm speaking with Donna Anderson, who has written Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. And when we come back, let's find out about these signs and see if we can teach people to recognize and recover from sociopaths. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Right now, he's probably slow dancing with a bleach blonde chimp, and she's probably getting thirsty. Right now, he's probably buying her some.
Want a first-class shopping trip around the world without the jet lag? Discover Trendy Treat and shop like a socialite. Made to measure clothes and pieces from the world's rising design stars from Africa to Asia, many of whom are loved by celebrities like Bono, Empire's Annika, and Paris Hilton. Lustworthy bags, dazzling gems, and simply stunning clothes. This spring, elevate your style and become globally glamorous with Trendy Treat, your new fashion obsession. Visit TrendyTreat.com and wait for your friends to say, "Where you been shopping?" I know they will.
Moving into your new home or office? When you trust the experienced professional movers at Instatrans LLC, you can count on a no-rush approach and experienced staff to make your move seamless. Whether it's one piece, a jacuzzi, we've moved many, or your whole home, Instatrans movers will give your items the care they deserve. We specialize in residential and small business moves, so call us today, 617-614-7240, or visit us online at InstatransLLC.com. Always on time, always professional.
Are you having problems getting reimbursed for your medical bills? Wise up and call MedWise, the master insurance advocates. MedWise owner Adria Goldman Gross is nationally recognized as the expert in the field with more than 25 years' experience. If you've been denied insurance claims or if you had issues recovering money from your insurance company, Adria at MedWise may be able to help. Call 559-MEDWISE. If you've been overcharged for medical services or are just getting a runaround, MedWise can put a stop to it. Call 559-MEDWISE or go to medwise.nyc. That's medwise.nyc. Maybe you've laid out thousands of dollars for medical services, and now the insurance company or the government is refusing to reimburse you, or the process is just dragging on. MedWise will straighten them out and get things moving. When you call your insurance company, you get nowhere. When Adria from MedWise calls, they shiver. Go to medwise.nyc or call 559-MEDWISE. Just say, "Adria, I need help," and get results.
Where does your pet stay when you go away? McGrupp's Doggy Daycare, Pet Hotel, and Spa. That's where. Conveniently located off Route 114, diagonally across from Market Basket in Middleton, with an easy on and off from both Route 95 and Route 1. At McGrupp's, your pet will feel right at home. They offer crate-free overnights, individual rooms, deluxe suites, and even a room service option. Now that's the royal treatment. And if you want your dog to go from smelling crummy to yummy, they offer a full-service grooming salon, offering everything from baths to the top dog treatment, including a full manicure. McGrupp's premier pet destination offers everything from relaxation lounges to an indoor play park. They're a 10,000-square-foot facility, which includes two huge outdoor runs. There's plenty of room to separate the small dogs from the big ones. So if you're looking for a day off, a week off, or regular doggy daycare, call McGrupp's today at 978-304-4990. Just one word of caution, your pet may expect this kind of treatment when he gets home. Visit McGruppsDoggyDaycare.com. That website again, McGruppsDoggyDaycare.com.
If you're looking for an electrician or handyman, look no further. Need a fixture hung? Dimmers on your light fixtures? Under-counter lighting? No problem. Whatever your electrical needs are, you'll want to call Sean Smith, licensed electrician. Sean has built an outstanding reputation throughout the North Shore for consistently delivering superior quality work. And if you need handyman services, Sean can do that too. So whatever you need done, big or small, pick up the phone today and call Sean at 978-998-1610. That number again is 978-998-1610. He's waiting for your call.
Located in Boston's North End holds one of our best-kept secrets, Antico Forno, ranked number 9 of the top 10 Italian restaurants around the world within the category of being one of the most authentic. With a welcoming family feel, it's hard to argue the experience you have when enjoying dinner at Antico Forno. Best known for their brick oven pizza, their world-class traditional cuisine does not fall far behind. Come enjoy dinner at Antico Forno and feel like part of the family. Open daily from 11:30 a.m. until 10 p.m. Call us today at 617-723-6733 or visit us at AnticoFornoBoston.com.
New England winters can wreak havoc on our vehicles. Sometimes it's just not enough to wash and vacuum them. Sometimes a full detail is in order. Do you remember the last time your car or truck was in that pristine condition? Remember how you felt? It's time to get that feeling back again. A full detailing from Tony's Recon can get you back in the driver's seat. Call Tony at 978-590-3693 or visit tonysrecon.com. You'll be glad you did.
All right. We're back. You're listening to Talk with Francesca. I'm speaking with Donna Anderson, author of Red Flags of Love Fraud, 10 Signs You're Dating a Sociopath. Welcome back, Donna.
I'm glad to be here.
So, Donna, what, you know, for those who were not listening in the first half, let's just briefly tell our listening audience what a real short clip of what has transpired in your life, and then we'll get right into the signs of what dating a sociopath is all about.
Well, I'm talking to you today because I found myself married to a con artist, and this person took a lot of money from me. He cheated on me, and in the end, I realized that it wasn't just because he was wayward. He had a personality disorder, and I consider him to be a sociopath. And sociopaths are people who live their lives by exploiting others. And that's exactly what my ex-husband did to me.
Thank you for that. Donna, so 10 signs you're dating a sociopath. Let's go through those.
Okay. Well, the first one is charisma and charm. And what that means is when you meet a sociopath, they typically have this appealing energy and magnetism about them. Mm-hmm. They seem to be very exciting. They're smooth talkers. They always have an answer, and they never miss a beat. And this is what makes them so appealing. So do you want me to go through, or do you have questions?
No, I was just taking it in. It reminded me of somebody years and years ago that I had met. And you know, I mean, I was involved for a very, very short period of time. But it just, you know, there was that personality, that just incredible charisma. And, you know, they really make you feel like you are so the only one. And then you find out that there's just a stream of others. And but it was very, very short-lived. But I do remember that sort of charismatic, not sort of, that very charismatic and charming personality. But, you know, how do you know? I mean, you know, many people are charming and charismatic. That doesn't necessarily make them a sociopath.
Exactly. And that's why there are 10 warning signs. And I say that you have to see pretty much all of them to come to a conclusion that somebody is a sociopath. You know, the next one I call sudden soulmates. And what that means is that when you meet this person, a sociopath seems to be everything you always wanted. You seem to have all these shared values. You seem to have all the same interests. And the reason for that is because the sociopath will figure out what it is that you're looking for, right, make themselves into that person, and then tell you that it was heaven sent that you met and that your relationship was meant to be and you're total soulmates.
Well, but there again, there's another, you know, argument for you. I mean, when people fall in love, this is very, very typical. I mean, this is what happens, and that,
right,
know, the Oxycontin starts, you know, shooting off, whatever it is that it does, and you have this chemical reaction, and you're very, you're finding things that you are so compatible with this person, and you're just not paying attention to the things that where there is no compatibility. So that's also very much a sign of love. And I mean,
exactly.
I think that does absolutely positively happen. I mean, you fall in love, and then of course 6 months later, maybe not 6 months later, a year later, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm not so sure about this, or I'm not so sure about that. But that's part of the whole process of being in love and falling
right,
in love.
Right, exactly. And there are two more traits that I'll go through that are typical of what happens during a relationship, you know, a normal relationship when you fall in love. And that's why the negative traits are so important. So the other two that can happen in a real relationship is sexual magnetism. And that's one. And if you feel this incredible attraction and if your physical relationship is kind of off the charts, well, it could be their excess testosterone. And the other thing is a phenomenon that we call love bombing. Love bombing means that you are showered with attention and affection. The person wants to be with you all the time and is always calling to find out where you are, and they call, text, and email constantly. So those first four that I've just described sounds great. I mean, who wouldn't want to be involved in a relationship where, you know, the person is charismatic, they're head over heels for you, they're
exactly, sexy,
and, you know, they think you're wonderful and showering you with attention. So the next thing you want to look for is that the sociopath tends to blame others for everything that goes wrong. Nothing is ever their fault. They never take responsibility. They always have an excuse for everything that happens, and somebody else always causes their problems. So that's a negative. And the next thing that is definitely a problem is that there are lies and gaps in the stories. Sociopaths lie like they breathe. They tell big lies, they tell stupid lies, they tell ridiculous lies, and they lie when they would be better off telling the truth, and sometimes they lie just for the fun of it.
So when you were married to, was his name James?
Yes, his name was James.
And so how soon, when you got into this relationship, did you start realizing there were gaps in the story?
It took a while. I would say probably a couple of months, you know. But the thing is, he was really slick.
Oh,
and
sure.
A lot of sociopaths are. And he was able to mix lies with the truth in a way that, you know, you knew part of it was true, so you would assume that the rest of it was true. And it really took a while for me to figure out that what he was saying was not true. So that's part of the problem with lies, is that if you're being lied to, you don't know it.
Why do you, just to get off track here for just a bit, Donna, why do you, other than the obvious that he was very attractive and charming and charismatic and all that other stuff, and you probably had a, you know, fabulous chemistry going, what the red flags that you saw? I mean, you're saying just a couple months into it. How long were you actually with him?
2.5 years.
So, and then, of course, yes, I don't, at what point did you decide that in that 2.5 years that you needed to just get your money and get out?
Probably about 2 years into it.
So for 2 years, you were giving him money and staying in a relationship where there were these red flags. And this is, believe me, not a criticism in any way at all, but rather just trying to get a sense of what really drew you to, or what made you ignore and really sit back and say, this is not right. And this is, you know, why did you keep going? What part of you do you feel you're responsible for not taking control of the situation?
Well, there were two things. You know, first of all,
well, you're 40 years old. You had never been married, right there, obviously, right? I mean,
oh, sure. I
right?
was vulnerable.
Right.
I was vulnerable.
Absolutely. And, you know, these high powered women sometimes, you know, they're high powered, but, you know, not necessarily always in a relationship do they have that same strength.
Right, and I'll come back to that in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me, you know, answer your question.
Sure.
I mean, the first thing was that, like a typical con man, he moved very quickly.
Mm.
Okay, he swept me off my feet. It was a whirlwind romance, which is very typical when you're involved with a sociopath. And then he quickly moved it along to the point where he, you know, was asking me for money, and you know, he before I knew it, I had invested heavily in this, and that's kind of like an anchor that keeps you there because
sure.
you don't want to part with what you've already invested.
Right.
And you know, he is highly manipulative, and you know, was able to, you know, make it sound like he was doing his best, and it wasn't his fault that things didn't work out. It just wasn't taking as long, or it wasn't moving. He would stand there and cry. He would say, "I'm so sorry that
the pity
this
party,
isn't."
Yeah.
You know, that it's not happening as quickly as I like, you know, and I'm really counting on you and all this other stuff. So that was one thing. And then the other thing is, you know, my own belief of what a commitment means.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had married this man, and, you know, as we're taught through society and perhaps our faith or whatever, you don't abandon that.
Right. And so you didn't. And
I didn't. I didn't until I knew I had to get out, and I was just trying to get out and recover what I had lost, or at least enough to get going again. And, you know, when I found out he was cheating on me, well, all those, you know, ideas of staying together, that was out the window.
So, but you were pretty slick when you, that you didn't get emotional with all of this when you found out he had a child with another woman. I mean, you were able to pull it off and you didn't get emotional. So you weren't, it sounds like.
Oh, I was emotional. I just wasn't emotional to him.
Well, but you weren't, it doesn't sound like you were emotional about the ending of the relationship, but rather how you had been scammed.
When I discovered he was cheating on me, you know, at that point, that's all I knew.
Right.
I didn't know until, you know, 4 or 5 months later, when I spoke to that other woman, that the whole thing was a scam right from the very beginning. And once I started to realize the depth of what he had perpetrated, that's when I really started, you know, wondering how in the world this could have happened.
Well, you know, I mean, I say there's a fine line, you know, in life in general, you know, in one side or the other. You know, you never really know. And, you know, you want to be trusting. You want to be loving. I mean, you don't want to be walking, looking over your shoulder all the time, certainly. But how do women really prepare themselves for, or maybe not prepare themselves, but how can they take care of themselves so that they don't end up in this situation? So what are some of the other signs? I mean, you talk about, you know, I mean, the first four, like you said, you know, charismatic, charming, your soulmates, there's that, you know, sexual magnetism, what you call love bombing. All those things are really great. And then it's like it it's almost like that person sort of builds up this really nice foundation of perfection, a perfect situation in love. And then they start to, then the blaming comes in, is what it sounds like happens. Like in the beginning, there couldn't be better. And then once they've kind of hooked you, then they start making you sort of feel bad about yourself. Is that what you're hearing?
That's part of it. I mean, part of what happens is something that's called the psychopathic bond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
tell our listening audience about that.
Okay. So what happens is that in a normal human relationship, a bond forms, you know, between the two people who are involved. And this is normal. It's set up by nature in order to have people want to stay together in order to raise children. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that the bond begins in the very beginning of the relationship, and it is established through pleasure. Okay? So, and this is normal. This is what happens in every relationship, is that the two people feel pleasure. Now, because sociopaths are so over the top in the love bombing and telling you how wonderful you are and putting you up on a pedestal, the pleasure is very intense.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
So that's the first thing. So then what happens, and you made a brief reference to it earlier on, there's a hormone called oxytocin.
Right.
And oxytocin is released in the body and in the bloodstream when people feel intimacy. So the intimacy can be sexual, or it could just be emotional intimacy, even hugs or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And oxytocin has the effect of making us feel calm, trusting, and content, and it alleviates fear and anxiety.
It's a drug.
Yes, 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 it's a drug. And also, when we have feelings of love, you have a lot of intensity to this, and it also releases a lot of dopamine in your system.
Yep.
Well, dopamine is the same substance that's associated with addiction, okay? So you got all this chemistry going on. And then the next thing that happens is that the sociopath will do things to create fear and anxiety. And what that means is, like, he was taking my money, you know, and although it wasn't taking it, but I knew my money was going out and it wasn't coming back in. This makes me upset. You know, perhaps I realize that he's lying to me or something. So I have these things that are creating fear and anxiety. Well, counterintuitively, fear and anxiety actually strengthens the bond that you feel. Okay?
Really?
So it makes the psychopathic bond stronger.
Really? Then, why is that?
This is just what researchers have found. It's based on addiction research.
Ah.
Okay.
So is falling for a sociopath or a psychopath, is that an addictive behavior?
Well, there are people who say that all romantic relationships, all romantic feelings are essentially addictions. You know, there's a woman by the name of Helen Fisher, who is a researcher in Rutgers,
right.
I think, and she talks about how all romantic love is essentially an addiction, and involvements with sociopaths tend to be highly addictive, you know, because of this intensity, because, you know, I said that the bond gets strengthened through fear and anxiety, and then what happens is that the person like me or another victim who's involved with a sociopath, what you want to do is you want to the relationship to go back to how wonderful it was in the beginning. So you may go to the sociopath and try and work things out and perhaps apologize for things that you didn't do, you know, just to get back to how wonderful it was in the beginning. And then perhaps the sociopath relents, you kiss and make up, everything's wonderful for a while, and that strengthens the bond again.
Did you do that?
We had some fights. Yes, I mean, I definitely wanted him to apologize, and he would promise that everything would be better. So yes, yeah, to an extent. I mean, other people did it more than I have, according to some of the cases that I've heard.
Uh-huh.
But the point is that this goes around and around and around, and with each turn of the wheel, the psychopathic bond that you feel gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and it makes it very, very difficult to escape from these situations.
So how does, I mean, other than just having the courage to really, you know, look at yourself square in the face and say, I'm leaving because I, you know, I'm losing money, I'm not happy. I mean, how do people get, it sounds like people get stuck in the relationship.
Absolutely.
I mean, like really stuck, but from an addictive perspective, I'm talking about.
Yes.
Not because they're losing money necessarily. I mean, does it always evolve around money?
No. I mean, yeah. There are plenty of sociopaths who get involved in situations, and it's not necessarily taking money. Sometimes, sociopaths always want something. Although it may not be money. Sometimes they want somebody to provide them with a place to live. Sometimes they want someone who, like, looks good on their arm because they want to move up in the company. Sometimes they want a partner because they want cover, that they look like they're this nice, upstanding individual when, in fact, they're having this, you know, double and triple and quadruple lives, you know, with all these other things going on.
White-collar crime, right?
Yeah, you know, it could be cover for a crime. It's often cover for cheating or for, you know, a type of behavior that people might consider aberrant. So, you know, but they want to present themselves to the community as, you know, being this nice, upstanding person with a wife or husband and family.
So it's not usually some, you know, grub on the street. I mean, it's usually someone that they dress nice, they look nice, they act nice. They give you a completely different impression of who they really are.
That's part of the biggest problem, is that we all have an idea that someone who is this devious is like a criminal or a drug dealer. And, you know, I knew I never hung around with criminals and drug dealers, but did I expect a man who always wore a dinner jacket with a pocket handkerchief, you know, in his pocket to be a man who was a con artist? No.
Right. So we've got let's continue with some of the other signs, that because we haven't gone through them all.
Right. There's one sign that I call intense eye contact. Huh. And this could be like the predatory stare. I mean, sometimes you can look at some a sociopath and their eyes kind of look empty, kind of like shark eyes.
Mm.
And this is an important sign. You don't see it all the time. According to my research, about 59% of the people saw this particular sign, but it's the only one that's a physical visual, that, you know, it's something that you might be able to see in this person, you know, because other than that, I mean, sociopaths, you know, they're just like the rest of us. You know, some are handsome, some are homely, you know, they're tall, short, all races, all religions, all demographics. So this is the only physical thing that you might be able to see. And another important thing is that if you ever, like, get the impression that somebody is looking at you like you're the next meal, you know, that hair on the back of your neck goes up or something like that. I mean, you should pay attention, you know, because...
See, that's funny. I would think it would be just the complete opposite. I would think that a sociopath is such a liar they couldn't look you in the eye.
Oh, absolutely not. And that's another misnomer. You know, people think that if somebody is looking at you directly in the eye, that they're not lying, and that's not true at all. Sociopaths will look deep into your eyes and lie, and you would never know it.
Well, that one I have a hard time understanding and grasping, because when you're looking into someone's eyes, you're looking into their soul. You know, there's a real, you know, I find that one very hard to grasp.
Well, I hope you don't have the experience of it happening, but, you know, sociopaths are so convincing that absolutely they can look you into the eye and lie, and everything that comes out of their mouth is a lie.
What else? I would think they would have real split personalities, too.
Yeah.
Sort of like that whole just sort of almost bipolar, maybe not bipolar, but sort of like that Jekyll and Hyde kind of.
Well, that's one of my symptoms, a Jekyll and Hyde personality. You know, one minute they love you, the next minute they hate you, their personality changes, and it's just like flipping a switch, and you have absolutely no idea what happened.
I would think that initially, you know, I could see how there could be a hair of excitement initially, you know, sort of the challenge. But I would think that would wear off very, very quickly. The part that I find most confusing about the whole thing is I had this obviously false assumption that someone who would have a good sense of themselves and, you know, who was confident in themselves wouldn't fall for this kind of thing. And it sounds like that's not the case at all.
It's not the case.
Because obviously you were a high-powered woman. You had a great job. You're confident. You've gone places. You've done things. You've written books, and it happened to you.
Right.
And it happened. That's what it sounds like. It happened to you.
Yes, it did happen to me, and I can assure you that plenty of the people I hear from, and I've got 5,000 cases. They're all high powered. I mean, this happens a lot, and I can explain that. A colleague of mine did some research to try and figure out what it is that makes women vulnerable to a psychopath, because that was the terminology that she used in her research, and she found three things, and they're not at all what you would expect. The first thing that she found, a trait that makes a woman vulnerable, is extroversion. Okay, the women who were high-powered, outgoing, go-getters, these are the people who were susceptible to a psychopath, and I'll explain why. A psychopath is also extroverted. They are they're charismatic and energetic, as we talked about. So what happens is that this becomes the point that where the two people have in common. Because if you look at a woman, you know, who's a high-powered type of woman, often what happens is that men are intimidated by them, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's hard for people who are professionals and lawyers and accomplished women to get a date.
Yep.
And what happens is that they also are looking for somebody who is like them. I mean, they'll may look at someone who is kind of a little low-key as perhaps wimpy, you know, and not all that appealing. And so what happens is that who fits the bill of what they're looking for, someone who's charming in magnetism, but a psychopath?
Yeah.
Okay? So that's the first thing that happens. The second thing that happens is that the women who get involved with psychopaths tend to be very invested in relationships. You know, they're looking for those tender moments. They're looking for the romance. And the psychopaths lay it on thick. Okay? So they're providing, we call it the grand gesture. They'll do something absolutely amazing, you know, to do a public display of affection, you know, for the love of their life that they found. And, you know, women are vulnerable to this. And the third trait is cooperativeness. You know, my colleague found that the women who get involved in these situations are highly cooperative. They're like in the top 95th percentile of the trait of cooperativeness in that, you know, they're willing to do what needs to be done to get a project done or to put someone else's interest before their own. I mean, this is what gives them satisfaction. So these are the traits, you know, extroversion, cooperativeness, and investment in relationships. These are the traits that make women vulnerable.
Amazing. Donna, I'd love to be able to talk longer, but we're out of time. So I would love to let our listeners